Wednesday, May 6, 2015. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, sports writer from Denver, Colorado. Hey, you know, we release a new podcast every single Wednesday. We bring you just a little bit different of an outlook on the world of sports than you will get anywhere else. You can download the podcast, or better yet, you can subscribe to the podcast. A couple different ways you can subscribe. If you are an iPhone user, you can go to get the podcast on iTunes, subscribe to it there. Make sure you don't miss a single episode. If you're not an iPhone person, that's okay too. You can go to Podcast Republic, subscribe to it there, and it will download directly to your Android device every single week when we do release it. If you would like to contact me, let's get this stuff out of the way real quick so we can jump in because we have a lot to get through today. If you'd like to contact me, Twitter handle, at Daily Dose Sports, D-A-L-Y, Daily Dose Sports. You can find me there. You can also find me by the same name on Facebook. Twitter and Facebook, I know sometimes you get some boring feeds. Sometimes you get some stuff that you don't always want. You might want to add the Daily Dose. We'll give you some breaking news. We'll give you links to articles, a couple thoughts on the game. Sometimes we'll live tweet some games and some things like that. You might want to check us out. If you would like to go to the website, we do have a website, dailydosesports.wordpress.com. Got some new articles going up every single week. Got some polls, got some different things that up there that you might want to check out. I think you will really, really enjoy it if you will check that out. And like I told you last week, we do have email. Got to talk a little bit about some of the emails that I have received so far. But you can email the show, dailydosesports@gmail.com. That is coming directly to us. Might read one of your emails on the air. You never know. Might talk about it in an article. You never know. But if you would like to email the show, would love to hear from you. Get your thoughts. Get your feedback. This week, we do have a lot to get to. Going to take a look at the NFL draft. Who are the winners in the NFL draft? Who may be missed in the NFL draft? A couple different thoughts on that. We're also going to bring back former Denver boxer Frankie Sanchez. He's going to recap the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. He'll be calling in here in a few minutes. Frankie nailed the fight. He said exactly what was going to happen, and that fight went down exactly like he said it would. We want to talk to him just a little bit. We're going to discuss the NBA playoffs, give you a little bit of feedback on the NBA playoffs and how that is going. Plus, a very popular segment, the Daily Dose Top 5. If you haven't heard the show before, and we are getting some new listeners. If you haven't heard the show before, I encourage you, stick around for the Daily Dose Top 5. You don't want to go anywhere. You know, it was a fun weekend for sports. There was a ton of things going on. You had, you know, the NBA and NHL going in playoff mode, and you know how big those games are. Of course, we had the fight. Gonna talk about that. Major League Baseball is now, you know, getting further along into the regular season. You had the Kentucky Derby. Just a lot of things going on sports-wise. For it being spring, there's no football. A lot of things going on in the world of sports that were really kind of cool. You know, I did something different this weekend. I did something that just... The circus was in town. The circus was in town. And no, that's not a euphemism. The circus was in town. I took my kids to the circus. I know. It's not politically correct. It's not politically correct. As soon as you say, I went to the circus, everybody's like, oh, did you? Oh, you're one of those people. I know, you know, the cruelty to animals and all that stuff. But, you know, I hadn't been since I was a kid. And so my wife and I took the kids, went over to the circus, and we checked it out. You know, there were some protesters out front. There's some people out front talking, saying, you know, same thing, the cruelty to animals. And you know, animals should be in their, they need to be in their natural environment. You know, struggling for food, being shot by poachers like God intended. But, you know, you get a little older. And so we walk past the protesters. You get a little older and you start to notice different things. Like I told you, I had been to the circus like when I was little, like, you know, 5 or 6 years old. You'd notice different things. When you go to the circus, you see things just a little bit different. Because as a kid, you see the clown out there, and he's a clown. I don't know. He's a clown. That's what he does, and he's just happy and goofy, and he wears the funny clothes, and he's a clown. But now, I look at things differently. I see the pain in his eyes that he's on a 3-day bender, and that he's completely lost his will to live. You know, I saw a clown juggling like 6 machetes while on a tiger's back, and the tiger is riding a unicycle. And as impressive as that is, and that is impressive, that wasn't even like a win for the clown. Like, he still has the eyes that you can tell. That wasn't even the greatest part of his day. Like, that wasn't anything to him. Because the best part of his day, the win of his day was, you know, he woke up hungover, realized he had three shows that day to do, and he didn't hang himself in the shower. You know, we saw the elephants. We saw like a guy get shot out of a cannon, the trapeze. You know, the trapeze tightrope family is always kind of a weird thing to me because there's this kind of weird group that had to learn this weird talent. And you know, like their dad forced them to learn how to do the trapeze and the tightrope and went out and practice every single day all the time, you know, like the Jacksons or something. And they're from like, I don't know, Romania or something, the Flying Bambinos. And it is kind of barbaric. We you know, they're forcing the kids out there to do this thing that they probably don't even want to do and make them do it because that's how you're going to make your money. You know, it's a good thing these days we don't raise our kids like that anymore. It's a good thing we've moved on from that. Right? Youth sports parents? Sorry, Timmy. Christmas is canceled this year. There's a big soccer tournament, and you need to get yourself a scholarship. Good thing we don't do that anymore. Hey, let's jump in to the world of breaking news, because we do have some news coming out today. Monte Ginobili, 37 years old, with the San Antonio Spurs, he is going to take about a month and decide whether or not he wants to return to basketball. We saw them struggle down the stretch. We saw Manu, especially physically, struggling down the stretch. Going to talk a little bit more about that here in a few minutes. It was a good Sunday for Dale Earnhardt Jr. He managed to win Talladega, and it seems like the Earnhardts have always been good. His dad was very good at Talladega. Junior now wins at Talladega. You know, Earnhardt Jr., most popular racer on the NASCAR circuit. Very, very good for NASCAR when he wins. So I know that those people had to be very, very excited when he was able to win the race on Sunday. Always very good there. Tiger Woods and Lindsey Vonn have announced that they have ended their relationship. It's been 3 years. Golfer and Olympic skier came together, and they seemed like they kind of got each other. They understood the pressures that each other faced, and they've been together now for 3 years. They have now officially broke up. I will always cherish the memories that we've created together, said Vonn. Unfortunately, we both live incredibly hectic lives. It made me think that maybe she's looking for someone who's just has a little more future ahead of him. Maybe someone who's a little better professionally. I you know, don't want to just play around with someone who hasn't quite figured out what they're doing professionally yet, and I'm looking for something just a little bit better. So those two are on the outs. Hey, Isaiah Thomas is returning to New York basketball. I want you to think about this. Thomas has now become president and part owner of the New York Liberty of the WNBA. And we know that James Dolan is the owner of both the Knicks and the Liberty. He has now brought Thomas back to be president over the WNBA team, which makes me wonder, for one, if he's bringing him back because he is not liking the direction that Phil Jackson is going, and eventually he's just going to move him over to that Phil Jackson chair. But the other thing, didn't Isaiah get popped for, you know, some sexual remarks he said? Oh, yeah, that'd be a great idea. Let's get him over on the women's side where he can't offend anyone. This might not go well in a number of different ways. And lastly, you know, the big news coming out. There is a class action lawsuit that was filed on Tuesday on behalf of two Las Vegas residents seeking more than $5 million from Manny Pacquiao, his manager, and his promoters, because they were fraudulent in concealing his shoulder injury before his fight against Floyd Mayweather. The suit says Pacquiao and his manager, his promotional company Top Rank, admitted they knew of the shoulder injury, but they didn't disclose it to the Nevada Athletic Commission as required by law, and they kept it secret from fans who bought tickets to the fight or ordered the fight on pay-per-view. And, let's be real clear, bet on the fight, which is another part of it too. You know, he did sign, you do have to sign a paper. I've heard a lot of people say, well, big deal. You know, they fought their 12 rounds. What do they care? Well, you do sign a piece of paper going to the state commission saying whether or not you're in good health or not. And he signed that, said he didn't have any issues. Then came out later, we found out he was trying to get Toradol before the fight because the shoulder was already hurting. We saw during the fight, he didn't throw many punches. Maybe it had to do with that. Maybe it had to do with the fact that he kept getting punched in the face when he did. I don't know. Now he's got a torn rotator cuff. This is going to be very, very interesting to watch. I don't know if these lawsuits are going to go anywhere. I know that me and Frankie Sanchez are considering opening up our own lawsuit And I don't, we'll probably settle out of court. I'm not going to lie. I would be okay with settling out of court. Maybe for just some good, like a good Filipino barbecue pork dinner, or like, you know, the chicken adobo. That's also really, really good. So I think we're a little bit easier. Going to be interesting to see what the judges do on this stuff. Here's the question. Here's the question in all seriousness. Did Manny Pacquiao perjure himself in signing that document saying he was okay? I don't know. Something to keep an eye on. Let's talk a little bit about the NFL draft. Because, you know, I'm going to be honest. And I'm an NFL guy. I love the NFL. I enjoy the NFL draft. I do actually follow it in pretty good detail. It's kind of a boring draft, wasn't it? There really wasn't much drama. The really only drama was whether or not the Titans were going to, you know, trade that number two pick or not. They had a few different offers. They were getting offers from Philadelphia. They were getting offers from Cleveland. They ended up taking it. They kept the pick, and they took Marcus Mariota, is what Roger Goodell said, NFL commissioner. Nice job on that. It's Mariota. I don't know how you confuse that. You know, all the talk about domestic violence in the NFL, and he goes and murders that name. So we had, for the first time in a little while, we had Jameis Winston taken number one, quarterback out of Florida State. We had Marcus Mariota go number two, quarterback out of Oregon. I want you to just keep that in mind. You know, other than that, the only drama that we had was where just a few players would go. We weren't quite sure where they would go. Lyle Collins was a top 15 projection offensive tackle out of LSU. He didn't get drafted. And you know, kind of a weird story about Collins. If you haven't heard the story, pregnant former girlfriend was murdered. And Collins hasn't been named a subject. He has been questioned by police. He hasn't even been named a person of interest. But after the Aaron Hernandez situation, teams are a little bit, you know, iffy on whether or not to draft that guy. Because if I draft him and he ends up in jail the next week, I just lost my pick. I'd rather use it on something else. So they skipped him. They skipped him in the first round. And then on the day of the second round, on that Friday, Collins said if he was drafted after the second round, he would refuse to report to any team that took him. I will refuse to report to any team that selects me after the second round. So well, you know what teams did? Okay, then we won't take you at all. How about reporting then? No one drafted him. Now, you can sit there and say you stood up for yourself or you did whatever. Let's be real clear. That's a $10 million mistake. And now, you can go sign with whoever you want to, but they don't got to pay you. There's no, you know, here's the amount that I'm going to be due as a first-round draft pick, as a second-round draft pick, as a third round. It makes no difference. I don't have to pay. I can pay whatever I want. So you can say, well, if you're not going to take me, you know, in the second round, then don't take me. Okay, we'll take it all. And you won't get paid. You hurt yourself on that first contract. That first contract is not huge to begin with. You hurt yourself on that first contract quite a bit. Right now, Bills, Jets, Saints, and Eagles have at least shown that they are interested in him. He is a big-time talent. You just don't know what exactly is going on in that situation. Dallas Cowboys took troubled defensive end Randy Gregory out of the University of Nebraska. You know, and Gregory had failed multiple drug tests. And here's the thing that stands out to me more, though, because the drug tests aren't a huge thing depending on, you know, his situation. But there were a few teams out there, and I heard from a few different sources that there's more stuff out there about Gregory that hasn't come out yet. And we won't touch that guy. We won't go near him. There were teams that said, didn't matter how far he fell, based on some of the information we have, we will not draft him no matter what. But, you know, Dallas just recently has signed Greg Hardy. And you know, Hardy, you might remember, had threatened and assaulted his former girlfriend and is suspended for the first 10 games. So what do the Cowboys care if they come get another guy like that? They obviously don't care about things like that. So they're going to go sign him. And hey, hopefully this all works out for him. We'll see how that ends up. There were a couple drafts that I like. There were a couple teams that I think got it right. I really liked the Cincinnati Bengals, and I can't believe I'm saying that, but I really liked what the Cincinnati Bengals did. We were looking at these two offensive tackles, Cedric Abuhi and Jake Fisher, and thinking these guys are going to go in the first round. Well, they actually, one of them slipped to the second round. So the Bengals get Abuhi out of Texas A&M, and then they get Fisher out of Oregon in the second round. These are both really, really good offensive tackles that should be able to step in and play pretty right away. Now, here's the downside to the draft. They're going to protect Andy Dalton and keep him on the field. I'll let you think about that for just a second. And that means Andy Dalton's staying in. You're not going to get rid of him. It's a big playoff game, and he's looking awful. He's going to still be healthy. So, yeah, it's a little bit good and a little bit bad. Cleveland Browns, I like what they did. They were able to get Danny Shelton, nose tackle, out of Washington. And then they were able to get in that second pick. They had two picks in the first round. Cameron Irving, center, out of Florida State. Even somehow got Duke Johnson out of Miami in a later round pick. But here's the one thing about the Browns. We thought this last year. We thought the Browns had a good draft. I'm not falling for that again. Remember last year, we thought they had such a good, oh yeah, look what they moved up and got Johnny Manziel. Oh, that's a really good pick. Is it? Is it really? Not really sure. Jacksonville Jaguars, I like what they did too. Dante Fowler in the first round, outside linebacker, who I thought might be the best player coming out of this draft. And then they got TJ Yeldon, a running back in the second round. It seems like the Jaguars are kind of starting to get things straight the way they should build their team. The problem with Jacksonville, they just have so many holes. I think they're going in the right direction. They just need, like, you know, 15, 16 more of these kinds of players, and then they'll finally actually field a team. A couple drafts I didn't like. And I've heard some people talk about, the Washington Redskins, and they were so gutsy, and they passed up Leonard Williams, and they took Brandon Scherff, offensive tackle, out of Iowa. Here's the problem. Leonard Williams looks like the real deal to me. Brandon Scherff, I saw him play a couple times. He's really smooth. And he looks like he would be a good offensive tackle. He looks like he would have all those skills, except for the fact that he gives up sacks all the time. So you can sit there and look at him and say, oh, yeah, he's a great specimen. Yeah, so is Tony Mandarich. I don't care how you look. I want to see your production. And his production, I didn't think was that good. I didn't really care for the San Diego Chargers traded three picks to move up and get running back Melvin Gordon. They were kind of tired with Ryan Matthews, and Ryan Matthews left, but Ryan Matthews is always hurt. Ryan Matthews probably fumbled a little bit too much for them. So they move up and they get Melvin Gordon, who is like 215 pounds. And last year alone at Wisconsin had seven fumbles. I've got some bad news for you. You might not have improved yourself. And here's a bad thing. When you have a young running back like that come into the league, teams know, hey, he fumbles a little bit. Oh, I'll make sure I take a swipe at that ball. Defenses are going to know they want to come in and see if they can rip the ball out of Melvin Gordon's hands. Here's the other problem I have, though. We have seen Wisconsin running backs in the past. We kind of know how this story ends, don't we? Terrell Fletcher, Ron Dayne. We've seen it right here in Denver, Monte Ball, who is getting beat by CJ. He's getting beat out right now by CJ Anderson, who played most of his career like a junior college. Michael Bennett was another guy that came in from Wisconsin, and they put up these huge numbers in that system at Wisconsin. They put up these giant numbers like Melvin Gordon did this year, and then they get to the NFL, and it's like, oh, yeah, that system was pretty good. You should go running it some more, because here in the NFL, that stuff doesn't work. The other team I didn't like, and a team, obviously, I've not liked their offseason at all in general. San Francisco 49ers get Eric Armstead, defensive end out of Oregon. I have a problem, and I told you in the weeks coming up to the draft, I can't just watch the combine workout and ignore how they played all year when the games were live and it meant something. Because what I see from Armstead, yes, he looked great in the combine. Ran a really good 40, jumped really high, I don't know, swam really fast, whatever those stupid tests are that they give you in the underwear Olympics at the combine. But I want to see, does the guy want to be really, really good at football? Does he play hard on every down? No. Does he produce much? No. So I don't really care what he does in the combine. I want to see if the guy can play. I don't know if I like that pick from a team in San Francisco that really has a lot of holes to fill, because everyone left that team as quickly as possible when Jim Harbaugh left. Maybe they should have drafted a GM. I don't know. Just a thought. Here locally, we are in Denver. If you haven't listened to the show before, yes, we talk national stories, but we do have a Colorado flavor. Here locally in Denver, Denver Broncos, speaking of risky picks, they took a risky pick themselves. Outside linebacker, defensive end, they traded up three picks for him as well and took defensive end out of Missouri, Shane Ray. A very, very talented guy, might not be the brightest guy, was pulled over with pot in his car the week of the draft. Now, here in Colorado, you might suspect, well, you guys don't really care about pot. Yeah, the story with this has nothing to do with pot. I don't care what you got pulled over with in your car. The story here to me is the fact that you got popped the week of the draft because you know when the draft is coming. See, in the NFL, and I don't know if we've talked about this too much this year on the show, but in the NFL, you know when the drug test is coming. They don't like just pop it on you and surprise you. Hey, drug test today. Come in here. You know, hey, in this day, April 19th of this, you come in and you do your drug test and we see how you are, Von Miller. You can, you know, find ways to manipulate that situation. The NFL doesn't want to find you guilty of marijuana. They want you on the field. They could care less about marijuana. They'll say they care about it. They don't care one single bit. They don't care about catching you. They don't care about finding out. They could care less about marijuana. They don't care. But if you aren't smart enough to not get popped the week of the draft, what makes me think you're going to be smart enough to avoid the test when you know it's coming? I question your intelligence a little bit, Shane Ray. Maybe him and Vaughn can be best buds. I don't know. We'll see. He is a very, very talented guy. If he can get his head on straight and start making a little bit better decisions, I do think he could come in and possibly be the next guy behind DeMarcus Ware coming. Him and Vaughn could be quite a tandem there coming in on the outside. Broncos took Ty Sambrylo, CSU offensive tackle. Could be pretty good. He's got to get a lot stronger. Very, very good in the passing game. Really, really athletic guy. He's a huge guy. 6'6", 311. He's just not very strong. Didn't lift the bar very much. He's going to have to put on some weight. He's going to have to get stronger. But he does have a big, big frame to hold that body. I would think that the Broncos would be putting him on the right tackle opposite Ryan Clady on the left tackle. And then they got a guy that you might not have heard of, Jeff Heuermann, a tight end out of Ohio State. You know, the Buckeyes didn't throw the ball much, and they certainly didn't throw the ball much to the tight end. But Jeff Heuermann has really good hands. He can stretch the field, and we know with them losing Julius Thomas, they kind of lost that ability. Virgil Green, good blocker, good short yardage, but not a guy that can stretch the field. They've brought in a couple guys that are very similar to that Virgil Green type. Jeff Heuermann is a guy that can actually go deep. He can actually stretch your field and stretch the defense a little bit. And we know that Peyton Manning is more than capable of making tight ends look really, really good. Think back to a couple of the tight ends that he had. Obviously, Julius Thomas, Dallas Clark, Jacob Tammy, Ken Dilger. Peyton Manning is a quarterback that is very, very good at making a tight end maybe look a little better than they even are. So keep an eye on that guy as well. We got to jump over to the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. I know there are a lot of people that thought, you know, maybe Floyd didn't win. He didn't really do that much. A lot of people were really disappointed that Manny didn't come out and fight a little better. My thoughts on the Pacquiao fight, and I told you last week, I wasn't planning on getting the fight. I genuinely wasn't. This was a fight that I wanted to see 5 years ago, and it kind of angered me that they made us wait this long. And I don't care about the reasons. I don't care about the money. I wanted to see this fight. I wanted to see it 5 years ago when they were a little more in their prime. I wasn't going to get the fight. Fortunately for me, I have some very dear friends who are far more generous than anybody that I know. And they said, hey, we got the fight. Come watch it. So I went and watched the fight, you know, live. But, you know, I did hear a lot of opinions. Manny didn't do much. Floyd was kind of a punk and just ran all night. I get all that. But I'll tell you who else didn't win the fight. I'm going to tell you who won it and who didn't win it. I'll give you someone who didn't win it. Jamie Foxx versus the national anthem. He lost that fight. And I don't mind if you put your own spin on the national anthem. I'm okay with that. I just didn't even know what he was singing. And not only was he changing it, it wasn't good. Like, he was missing notes. Like, I don't know that much about music, but I can hear and say, okay, that sounded flat. I don't know what you were doing. He definitely lost that. I'll give you a winner of the fight. They talk about, well, you know, Manny won this much and Floyd got $120 million. And hey, the IRS is who's winning this fight. Let's be real clear about that, because they're taking 30% off the top. And all they did was sit there and watch. Didn't take a punch. And they're going to sit there and collect all that money. IRS, big winner. Hey, do you remember back in the day when Mike Tyson used to fight. And he would walk into the ring, and he would have this entourage around him. And they were some pretty bad-looking dudes. Or even go back before that. And I know some of the audience might be too young to remember, but, you know, Muhammad Ali would go into the ring, and he would have some rough-looking group with him. I mean, they looked like if something broke out, they were ready. Floyd Mayweather walked into the ring with Justin Bieber carrying his belt. Do you see? Do you see what is... really? Really? And then... this is the worst guy in the world. Manny Pacquiao has Jimmy Kimmel dressed as like Reverend Run. What is going on? What have we become? Boxing used to be where like the baddest dudes on the planet were. That is not exactly what I saw. What was wrong, by the way, with Michael Buffer? Yeah, he sounded like Peter Brady. His voice was cracking. Let's get ready to rumble. Was he going through a voice change? You have one job. You have one job. Your only job is to talk. I don't care if you just don't talk for 3 weeks in preparation. You train, but you have one job. Why were you gargling with pennies before the fight? It didn't make any sense to me. Strange. Really just kind of weird. Hey, last week, you know, we had former boxer, Denver, Colorado native Frankie Sanchez on the show, and he broke down the fight for us and told us, here's what to expect, here's what this guy's going to do, here's how this guy's going to counter, and right now, we are going to bring him back again, because I just want to get his thoughts on the fight and the way the fight went. So right now, let's jump over to that. Let's go right now on the Daily Dose hotline to friend of the show and former boxer, manager, trainer, Frankie Sanchez. Frankie, we talked to you just this past week about the Mayweather-Pacquiao fight. You called exactly what happened. Nice call on the fight. You absolutely saw it coming.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, you know, like I said, it depends how your outlook on the fight, if it was, if you're a Mayweather fan, how you watch the fight, or if you're a Pacquiao fan. So I think I predicted the right outcome, and I myself was happy because I knew that Mayweather was going to do what he did, and a little unfortunate that Pac-Man didn't come in the way he everyone expected him to come in, but it is what it is, and Mayweather remained undefeated.
Well, you're right, and let me ask you this, because there's a lot of people for one today that are talking about boxing that, let's be honest, don't know boxing. They're the person, you know, that's working in the office, and they tuned in for that fight because it was the biggest fight. Let me ask you this, because I know where I was at. Did you feel like you got your money's worth on the fight?
Oh, sure, I did, and I understand what people are feeling, because you know, they want to see the blood and guts, and they want to see people bang it out for 12 rounds, but why would Mayweather go and do that when he'd never done that before? To please the people? No. He did the right thing. He outboxed a very fast and a very smart Manny Pacquiao. And whatever excuses Manny's come up with now, I don't understand. I mean, now he's claiming that his shoulder was tore 2 weeks before the fight and he didn't come in at 100%. Well, guess what? You know, J.J. Watt, one of the best NFL players right now, he plays injured all the time. You got to suck it up and you got to go. And it was a tough fight for Manny, because I think in the first round he got hit with that straight right hand from Mayweather about a minute 21 into the fight, and he said, whoa, maybe this guy is faster than I thought, and maybe he hits harder. So Mayweather fought a smart fight. Manny, he didn't. I mean, I think he had a game plan, but once he got hit with that right hand, everything just went out the door.
No, you're exactly right. And, you know, you talked about last week, you talked about Manny attacking Mayweather in angles and coming at him in different angles, not coming straight ahead. He absolutely didn't do that. He just kept coming straight ahead. And like you talked about, it wasn't so much the jab. It was that overhand right down the pipe that kept slowing Manny down and going, wait a second, my whole fight that I had planned in my mind and what we had planned for is out the window in the first round.
Yeah, and you're definitely correct on that. And you could see it in him. And like I said, everyone has a plan until they get hit in the face. Well, you know, I just watched the fight again this morning, and I always recommend people to, I always tell them, hey, look, when you watch a fight in a crowded arena or a crowded house or wherever you're at, you're going to go off the cheers of the crowd. And a lot of times judges do that too. I said, turn the volume down and watch the fight without any volume. And don't pick that, you know, you like Manny or you like Mayweather. You know, what you need to do is just, leave that outside right now and just look who was a better fighter. And you're correct. Mayweather threw about 15 hard right hands that hit between the first and fourth round that I just watched right now, and they were quick. He'd dodge back, and when Manny threw that lazy left jab, he'd reach right over the top and smack him with it. So, I mean, I think Mayweather was even a little quicker than Manny on Saturday night.
No, I think you're right. You know, and I told you, I had the score closer than I think a lot of people did. I had it 115-113 in favor of Mayweather. And you know, when I went through the rounds, and like you said, I think you have to watch it, you know, void of the emotion that goes with the fight, void of the crowd and that kind of thing. I know in the fourth, you know, Manny staggered him. It looked like he did actually hurt him. The key round for me, though, was that fifth round, because we didn't see any effects from, if Mayweather was hurt, and I think he was, we didn't see any effects that he came out and won the fifth. I thought that was the pivotal round in the fight.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And here's the thing. Mayweather did talk about it in one of the post-fight interviews. He said, listen, I don't fight like Manny every few months. He goes, you know, I take a little break longer than most because, you know, I'm such a high caliber of a fighter. But when I got hit like that, yeah, of course it's going to stun me a little more than Manny has probably been used to it, because he just fought Chris Algieri a few months back. He's like, and yeah, but, you know, I recomposed myself. I was okay. I got my feet under me. And, you know, of course you're getting hit with eight and 10 ounce gloves. It's definitely going to affect you. But like I said, I think he fought a great fight. It was a chess match for him, and he hit and he didn't get hit, and that's what boxing's supposed to be about. Why would he want to stand in there for 12 rounds with a, you know, puncher as fast and sometimes as powerful as Manny? He did the absolutely best thing that I would have done.
Well, no, you're exactly right, because he kept himself out of trouble. He saw, I think, that trouble early on, you know, in that, even a little bit in the second round, but more so in the fourth round, he got into some trouble, got out of that, and I think he learned from that. We talked about last week his ability to self-manage and get himself out of those situations. I thought he did a great job of that. What do you think now? Mayweather says after the fight, he's got one more fight. The best way to tell if boxers like this in this situation are lying is if they're talking. What do you think is next for Floyd Mayweather now?
You know, I think he's just going to fight just an average fighter. You know, there are talks that he's going to fight Amir Khan. I don't think that's a good fight for him. He's going to give up all his belts right now, is what he stated in his post-fight interview. You know, he says, let's give these other fighters a chance. I've already won them. I'm going to just give them all back the belts, meaning he's going to give up that weight class or whatever, you know, WBC, WBA title.
Sure.
That way other fighters can come in, which is, I think, was very friendly of him to do, very kind. I don't know. You know, he's probably going to go out with the bang. It may just be an average fighter that there for sure he could probably be beat. But then again, those are the fighters that you worry about, the Frankie Randles who come in and upset a guy like Julio Cesar Chavez when he's not ready for him. So I don't know. I think that maybe it'll just be a, you know, top 10 fighter, but he's going to for sure go out without losing.
What kind of weight do you think he fights that next one at? Do you think he stays down in that 147 range, or do you think he has any interest in jumping up in that 160 range?
You know, I don't know. If I were him, and I would just stay at the same weight. I mean, he doesn't have a hard time making weight.
Sure.
And he's, you know, the more you move up, the harder puncher some of these guys can be. So that's what I think he's going to do. Is he may just fight at the same weight, find a guy who's, you know, probably less in weight than him, and then go and try to get a win on his way out.
Well, and the fighter that you mentioned, Amir Khan, is the fight that I want to see. I'll give you one other fighter, but I don't think Manny wants anything to do with Gennady Golovkin with what he's done. Of course, he would have to jump up a little bit of weight, but Golovkin, to me, would be another guy that would be a really bad matchup for Floyd at his age right now.
Oh, yeah, he definitely wouldn't take that. I don't think he's that dumb. He's, you know, and I guess you can call him hand-picked fighters in the past, but you know, they were tough fighters. They're champions, like we talked about. And, you know, they're saying, well, maybe we should have fought this fight 6 years ago. Nah, that was the way you're going to see it 6 years ago or, you know, tomorrow. So, I mean, I know there was maybe fake talks about him and Manny rematching in Dallas Stadium here in a few months, but I don't think that's going to happen. So, like I said, I think he's going to take a few months off, and then they're going to announce his last fight. He's going to fight, and he's going to finish his contract with whoever it is, Showtime or HBO, and he's going to go out undefeated in he's hard to beat, and he's not going to chance it by fighting, you know, some young studs like Amir Khan or, you know, GGG. So we'll have to see.
Let me ask you this. Floyd obviously is a great fighter. Where do we rank him all time, though? Do we rank him up there with the all-time fighters? Because it's hard when you're talking about weight classes and those kind of things, but even just among welterweights, I don't know if he maybe cracks my top 10, but I don't know if he's even in my top 5.
Yeah, you know, and that's hard. It's hard to think, you know, can you? You never really, I mean, how can you put it together? Who were the guys these other guys fought? Who did he fought? I don't know. I mean, I think he's up there. like you said, he may be in the top 10. I don't know if he's the best, but you got to give the guy credit that he's not lost, and he's fought some good champions. I mean, he's fought, you know, the De La Hoyas, maybe a little washed up, but he's fought some good fighters. And I mean, I guess you got to put him up there, in my opinion. But you know, there's always going to be that controversy. You know, who did he fight? Who? Why did he always run? He was just a boxer, this and that. But you know, that I forgot the gentleman's name who they posted a lot on Facebook and on the boxing websites, who went undefeated for a while, 150-0 or whatever, back in the 30s. But
right,
they showed a video of the guy boxing, and Floyd would have absolutely destroyed him. You know, it's no comparison compared to some of the old timers today, with, you know, all the steroids in the food, all the fitness gurus out there that help with cardio and strength and conditioning. So it's hard to say, but
it is.
He still has my respect. I don't like his tactics out of the ring and some of the things he does, but in the ring, you got to give the guy credit. He is one of the best.
Well, I'm looking just at some of the fighters that we think of as welters, and I know you being a fight fan, you know, the Carmen Basilios, the Tommy Hearns, the Marvin Hagler's, and just trying to keep it kind of in that middleweight era. You sparred with Roberto Duran. I don't know how Floyd does even against a guy like Roberto Duran.
Yeah, you know, would Duran chase him? If he caught him with one? I don't know. Like I said, he has a style that people don't like, but that's what he says. That's my style, and that's why I've been in the game so long. And
sure.
You know, I hit and don't get hit, and he got not many scars on his face. His body seems like it's holding up pretty good. I think the biggest problem Floyd has is his hands, and his hands are hurt from all the years of fighting, but that goes with the territory.
Yeah, it does. Hey, Frankie, last question for you. Let me ask you this. Like I said, there's been a lot of people that have kind of complained. You talked about a little bit, you know, people wanted that blood and guts fight as opposed to the aspect of a slick fighter, the fighter that is a little maybe more skilled, a little more quick, those kind of things. Was this fight good for boxing, do you think?
No, not for the average fan, it wasn't. But, you know, people are saying, oh, it put a bad, another black eye on boxing, but it's not. People are going to pay. They're gonna they have another mega fight in 5 years. They're gonna sell it out again. It's okay. I mean, boxing. If you're a true boxing fan, you know that it was a very tactical fight, and Floyd did what he needed to win, and that's what we expected. I didn't expect a brawl. I thought if I was Manny, I would have came in like I told you before and try to throw some punches, try to use some angles. Well, like I said, that all got thrown out the door with that big right hand in the first round, and I knew it. I told everyone that was watching the fight with me that it's going to be just like this, Floyd just scoring and moving and doing what it takes to win. And, you know, I know Floyd's father was yelling at him in the corner. That was all just hype. That was just more to get people excited.
Sure.
Floyd knew what he was doing. And like he said in his interview, he knew he won the fight after the first round because he had Manny's number and he beat Manny to the punch. And, again, like I said, he, to me, did a great job, and he did what it took to win boxing's biggest fight in history so far.
Well, and it was. And the thing that I go back to is, you know, maybe it wasn't so much, you know, the big, the bloody fight or, you know, the knockout. It was the event, though, and there were so many people that bought this fight. There were so many people watching this fight, talking about boxing. At least it brought the fight into public consciousness, which to me is a win for boxing because we haven't had that in such a long time. Frankie, I want to thank you so much for joining us. I really do appreciate you giving the listeners some insight into the world of boxing. We just wanted to tell real quick, you are at Unico Fit over 4211 South Buckley Road in Aurora. If you are interested in training, getting a different kind of workout, self-defense, you want your kids to burn off some energy, go see Frankie over at Unico Fit, 303-627-5693. He will take care of you. Frankie, thank you so much for joining us here on The Daily Dose. I really do appreciate it.
Sure, man. Glad you guys enjoyed the fight. And like you said, get a hold of me if you have any questions. And yeah, I hope we can talk more fights in the future.
Definitely. I'd love to do it again. Hey, thanks again.
Have a good day.
Now, of course, with the, you know, the injury and the shoulder injury that Manny had, we're already starting to hear. They're already starting to put this into play. Oh, maybe we need to have a rematch. Here's a couple things that I want you to keep in mind. You're going to hear, if they do try to pursue this, because it was such a huge amount of money we were talking about, you're going to hear things like Manny wasn't healthy. Manny went on with the fight because he's a warrior and he wanted to do it. And they're even probably going to talk about, we're going to do this in say, a year. It's going to be Floyd's last fight, your last chance to see him. They might even put a purse and kind of a caveat on the fight that says, hey, if one of them knocks each other out, then we're going to give them an extra, you know, $5 million. You're going to hear those things. here's the thing for me personally, and I didn't think it was a horrible fight. I know there were a number of people out there that looked at Floyd running and looked at Floyd, you know, trying to get away, and he's a defensive fighter. I look at it very, very similarly to like a pitcher's duel or a, you know, the defensive game in football, and it ends up being 10-6. It's a little bit different. It doesn't have the fireworks, and it doesn't have, you know, the big moment of, oh wow, the long passes and the tons of scoring or the home runs. But it was still an entertaining fight. I was at the edge of my seat during the fight. I don't want to see it again though. They're talking already about rematch. They are already saying Manny, of course, would like a rematch. Of course he would. Who wouldn't like another huge payday? Floyd might even be able to be talked into a rematch. Of course he would. Again, who wouldn't want to get, you know, line their pockets with another round of this money? Here's my problem. For me personally, I already know how this fight's going to end. I knew how this fight was going to end. Me and Frankie talked about this last week, and we said point blank, he's going to outpoint him. He might get, you know, hit once or twice, but he's going to outpoint him. He's going to move around. He's going to be defensive, and he's going to win this almost like an Olympic fight, where your goal isn't so much a knockout or anything like that. It's just to get more points on the judges' scorecards. That's exactly how he won it. So for me, as far as talk of a rematch, you never say never in boxing, because you know these, you know, they'll try to put it together, try to get out there. I'm telling you right now, don't buy it. Here's all you need to know. If they said, you know, next May, we're going to have this on, and we're going to put it on Fox. We're going to have it. There's no pay-per-view. It's free to watch. I don't know if I'd watch it. Yeah, I saw it once. I don't want to see it again. I already know what's going to happen. I don't know. Depends on what NBA playoff game is on that night. I don't know if I'm going to watch it. I don't want to see it, even if it's on free TV. And trust me, it won't be. Speaking of the NBA, you know, just before the fight started, and I hope that you did flip over, because where we were at, we flipped over and we actually watched the Los Angeles Clippers finish off the Spurs in Game 7. Really, really good game, and one of the better first round NBA series I think that I've seen. Was it too early for those teams to be facing? Yeah, probably. I would like to see a reseed in the NBA playoffs, like I've told you in the past. But at the same time, Spurs beat the Pelicans in your final game, and you don't have to do that. You know, Chris Paul overcame a bad hamstring, and the Clippers just seemed like they were too young and too talented for a Spurs team that, I don't know, they might be at the end of their run. They had Tim Duncan playing on one leg. They had Tony Parker playing on one ankle. Manu Ginobili was pretty much a non-factor. I love Kawhi Leonard and what he brings to the table. It reminds me a little bit. Again, I don't like to compare him, but he reminds you just a little bit of Scottie Pippen. He can do a lot of different things really, really well. The Clippers just shot the three so well, and it could be the end of a run in San Antonio with all the injuries and the age. Let's take a look at round two of the NBA playoffs, because there are a few different storylines to look at in round two of the NBA playoffs. We've got the Atlanta Hawks versus the Washington Wizards, and that series is tied at one with the Hawks winning last night. You know, but John Wall didn't even play for Washington. He sat out. And it still wasn't an easy win for Atlanta, who needed a late run just to get past them on their home floor with John Wall not even in the game. I kept waiting to see, and I keep waiting to see, with the Hawks, when you are in a tight game and the game is on the line, who is going to take over? Who is going to be the guy that says, hey, I got this. I would think maybe like an Al Horford, but you know, he doesn't always have the ball. George Teague? Maybe. I don't know. You know, last night it was DeMar Carroll who comes through with 22 points. But I am not liking the way the Hawks look. I think they're too banged up. I think they have too many just nagging injuries. And I don't know if they have that guy that's going to step up and get them past. We could see Washington, as strange as it sounds, going to the semifinals again. Chicago Bulls and the Cavaliers. You know, Cavs, you know, they were done early with that last series with Boston. The Bulls were stretched to six games versus the Milwaukee Bucks. So can the, you know, Cavs just come out and you know, get that first win at home? Nope, they sure can't. You know, Cleveland might have the two best players in this series. The Bulls win that first one. They are up 1-0. The Cavs probably have the two best players. You've got LeBron and you've got Kyrie. And when they are on their game, they might be the two best players in this series. But here's the problem. After that, Chicago has the next four best players with Derrick Rose, Butler, Pau Gasol, Joakim Noah. They have the next four guys and four beats too. You know, the Cavaliers just look really, really different. And I can't even believe I'm saying this because he looked so bad, but they looked really different without Kevin Love in the lineup. You know, they can't stretch the floor. And on defense, they're just not as big in the paint. And the Bulls do love to eat up the paint. They like to go inside. Gasol, Noah's such a good passer down there. They will go inside, outside. Now, I'm not saying they'll get all their points inside, but they will try to go inside, outside. LeBron is going to have to take this series over and be great if the Cavaliers are going to get by this. And I don't know if that's going to happen. Chicago's going to need to get to the free throw line and actually try mixing in a few makes when you get there. Game two tonight is in Cleveland. You want to talk about a must-have for LeBron James. This game tonight is going to be it. Warriors and the Grizzlies. You know, Steph Curry was given the MVP trophy this past week. We may have to give out some NBA awards here in the next week or so, because the NBA awards are now coming out. You know, and here at the Daily Dose, we do things just a little bit differently. You might want to listen. We may be handing out some NBA awards here in the next week or two. Grizzlies tied the series, though, last night, 1-1. And, you know, they held Golden State to 90 points. 90 points. There were times we've seen Golden State go 90 points in three quarters. But the Warriors could not find the basket last night. Went 6-26 from the three-point line. And this is the fear. When we looked at Golden State being the one, and we said, hey, they're loaded, they're pretty good defensively, they can shoot it, they can do so many different things. Can a jump shooting team keep it up and win the whole thing? Klay Thompson and Draymond Green last night were not very good. Couldn't find it, couldn't get anything going offensively. You could see Steph Curry trying to get them both involved. A lot of driving kick action, giving them open looks, couldn't hit them. And then they just turned it over too many times. I think they had 22 turnovers. Grizzlies, they have to have Mike Conley. You saw the difference that he makes. He was wearing the mask last night, had 22 points. He's got that broken orbital bone around his eye. He's actually kind of got one eye a little bit shut, but they have to have him. He just changes them so different, makes them such a different looking team. Most important player in this series, to me, is the Warriors' Andrew Bogut. He has got to be more effective. You know, he was minus 16 on the plus minus last night, had a horrible game last night, 8 points, 12 rebounds, just didn't give them any kind of an inside presence. And we know with the shooting that Golden State has, obviously they can hurt you on the perimeter, but do they have any kind of a presence inside? And last night, Bogut did not give that. David Lee is not giving them much either. Those two are going to need to step up their game a little bit in order for the Warriors to get by a Grizzlies team that they're not pretty. In fact, they're kind of ugly, but you know what? They're going to make you ugly too. So going to be interesting to watch that series unfold. Los Angeles Clippers, you know, they come out of that series with the Spurs. They're stretched to seven games. And those game sevens, I don't care what anybody tells you, those game sevens, so much stress and so much exhaustion. They go to game seven. Meanwhile, the Rockets were done in six. And you know, Chris Paul's out. So, you know, game one in Houston, this is going to be a blowout, right? Yep. Except the Clippers blew out the Rockets. And Blake Griffin, we are starting to see him come into his own as a player. I mean, he's not just a dunker. For a long time, we looked at him and said, oh, yeah, he's a really good dunker. No, he's a player now. And you saw him in game one go for a triple-double, 26 points, 14 rebounds, 13 assists. And you know, the thing is, the Clippers, I told you before, they don't have a bench aside from Jamal Crawford. That is their bench. And we've seen the Rockets, at least in the last series, the Rockets bench was pretty good. That game one against the Clippers, they didn't do anything. Josh Smith has 9. Corey Brewer has 6. You have to establish that your bench is going to win that battle. And in game one, it was pretty even. That can't be the case because the Clippers don't have anybody. Aside, like I said, from Crawford, they don't have anybody else. And Austin Rivers, and I've said, and I hate to blast Austin Rivers, I know he's the coach's kid. He can't dribble. I know it's kind of a basic, you know, thing in basketball. He's a guard. Dude can't dribble. He can't put it on the floor. Go up and pressure him because he really can't hurt you with the dribble at all. Game two is tonight. You know, Chris Paul sat out that first game. He probably better sit out this game, you know, tonight too, with a hamstring injury like that. That is something that could extend. And if they have, you know, goals of getting past this series going any further, you probably need to sit Chris Paul again. Besides, you already won game one. So you're playing with house money. You can go up there and all the pressure is going to be on the Rockets. Everything is on the Rockets, for tonight in game two. We'll see how that one turns out. Couple stories, in the land of the NBA, Oklahoma City. They went and hired Billy Donovan, Florida coach Billy Donovan, who has been very, very good, won two national championships, had the Gators play in some others. Always a very, very good team. It's a risky move. It's a risky move, Oklahoma City. The Thunder, you know, this is a huge season for them. Can they keep Durant? And can they keep Westbrook? Will those guys stay? And you go get, and like I said, I like Billy Donovan. I think he's a phenomenal coach. But we've never seen him in the NBA. We don't have any idea what he's going to do with that team. I would think that Oklahoma City management ran this by Durant, right? Like they asked him first, hey, here's what we're going to do. Are you okay with this? You're not just making moves just on your own, right? When they got rid of Scottie Brooks, hey, we're going to get rid of Scottie Brooks. Of course, Durant is probably going, sweet, I might actually get the ball down the stretch. Westbrook might not have signed out of that. Because didn't it seem like under Scottie Brooks, they were just like, hey, give the ball to Westbrook and let's see what he can do. Just let him do whatever he wants. Who cares? Maybe Westbrook didn't sign off on that one. But going to be interesting to see what Oklahoma City does. I do think that move is bad for college basketball. College basketball doesn't have much. And we don't even get to know the players. We barely, you know, even watch the games. Because the only time we watch college basketball is when it gets to March Madness. That is it. Unless you're just a hoops junkie, you're not watching other than that. The only thing college basketball really has is the coaches. I mean, you have great coaches in college hoops. You've got Krzyzewski. You've got Izzo. You've got Patino. You had Donovan. You don't have him anymore. So I think that move is bad for college basketball. Now, here's something I want you to think about. Again, we're national stories, national show, but we do have a little bit of a Colorado flavor. For all the talk that there's been about Oklahoma City going out and finding their coach, and you know they're looking at Alvin Gentry, and they're looking at Billy Donovan, they're looking at a couple of different guys. You know the Nuggets don't have a head coach right now. The Nuggets do not have a head coach right now. Are they waiting for something? There's not even any talk. Like there's not even any talk locally. Here's the guy they're looking at. Here's you know what they're waiting for. What is it that they're waiting for? Are they waiting for Doug Moe to say yes? I can't figure out for the life of me. You would think they would be doing something. This franchise. I swear to you, the Denver Nuggets franchise, they probably should just burn the thing to the ground and move it to Birmingham and be done with it, because there's not even any word. Like we're waiting for this assistant coach when he's done with the Rockets or he's done with Washington or whatever, we're going to bring in this guy and that's our guy. I haven't heard a peep about what they are doing on the coaching front. Denver Nuggets, once again, leading the way in just being awful. I'll tell you who I think they're going to get. I think they're going to go get Mike D'Antoni. That's who I think the Nuggets are going to hire. A couple different reasons. I think the GM and D'Antoni have a good relationship. I think the owner and D'Antoni have a decent relationship. And I do think, as bizarre as this sounds, I think with the struggles that he had when he was with the Lakers, I do think he has to take a job like this, which is a dumpster fire. I think he has to take a job like this to kind of get back into the coaching realm where you know he can kind of prove himself again because it did go so bad with the Lakers. I think Mike D'Antoni is going to be the next Nuggets coach, but we're not hearing anything about any kind of a coaching move here in Denver. Hey, as we do every single week, right now we are going to give you our Daily Dose Top 5. We do this every week. It is a very, very popular segment. You don't want to miss it. You know, this week with the NFL draft going, and I told you earlier, we saw the two quarterbacks being drafted 1 and 2. Jameis Winston at 1 and Marcus Mariota at 2. You know, there's only been, that was only the 6th time that quarterbacks have actually been drafted in the modern era 1 and 2. It doesn't happen that often. And so we wanted to count down the 5 times that quarterbacks have been drafted 1 and 2. And I will tell you this, for the most part, and I want you to keep this in mind with Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, one guy usually does well. One guy doesn't do so well. Sometimes you'll see both of them not do great, but usually it's one does well and one doesn't. I don't know if that's coincidence. I don't know what that is. It's hard to figure Jameson Mariota. I've talked to you in the past about that. I'm not quite sure what to expect from either guy. I like Mariota. I think he's a good guy. He might be a good quarterback eventually. I don't think he's run anything close to a pro system, so I think that is going to be a huge adjustment for him. Jameis, I don't know what to expect from that kid. I mean, you saw him on draft night displaying his maturity as he makes sure to get his photograph with some crab legs. Obviously, he's grown up and has learned and moved forward, right? So without any further ado, let's move on to the Daily Dose Top 5. Five times quarterbacks have been drafted in the NFL draft, 1 and 2. Let's go to number 5. 2012, the number one pick in the draft that year, Stanford's Andrew Luck went to the Indianapolis Colts. And Andrew Luck has been very, very good. We have seen, he was one of those guys that you saw him when you came out of the draft. And there are certain guys, you know, Winston Mariota, you look at him, I'm not sure. I don't know if they're going to be good. Could be good if they get in the right system. Could be good if they get with the right team or the right coordinator. But I'm not. Andrew Luck, you just looked at him and you said, man, this guy's gold. There is no way he's not going to be good unless he just has injury problems. He's huge. You know the funny thing about Luck? He's way more athletic than you think he is. He's really athletic, dude. Ran well in the combine. He can move for a big guy. This year, I do think he has a huge test because they have brought in some weapons and have put weapons around him. Big test for Andrew Luck this year. Number two in that 2012 draft. Number two pick was out of Baylor, Robert Griffin III. Went to the Washington Redskins, had a great year that first year, and we were sitting there going, man, Luck and Griffin, they are the future. These two are going to be so good. And then Robert Griffin got hurt, and he kind of forgot how to play quarterback. And you know, the thing about Griffin that stands out to me is that it doesn't seem like he has a sense for avoiding injury. Like, I watch some of these guys play, and you know, you watch a Russell Wilson or someone like that, and he gets out of the pocket and he's moving, and here comes a safety in, and he gets out of bounds, or he throws it away, or he slides. And Robert Griffin just has none of those senses. He just runs out, and someone just blasts him, and what happened? I had no idea. Kind of strange. Let's move on to number four. Number four, 1999. The Cleveland Browns select out of the University of Kentucky, Tim Couch. And you know, Tim Couch, when he was at Kentucky, he put up some huge numbers. Problem was, kind of that same situation with Mariota. He was playing, in a system and under coach with Hal Mumme, where they were putting up these giant numbers, and you looked at him and you said, oh man, they're throwing the ball all over the place. Yeah, except for he's never come in and had to read a defense at the line of scrimmage in his life, because Mumme did that for him from the sideline. He had some injuries, had, you know, some broken thumbs and some different things. Never quite got on track. It was in the league a while, but never really a starter. Number two selection in the 1999 draft, Syracuse quarterback Donovan McNabb, drafted to the Philadelphia Eagles, went for 13 season, six-time Pro Bowler. And here's all you need to say. He took the Philadelphia Eagles to the Super Bowl. How many guys can say that? Him and like Ron Jaworski, that's it. End of the story. Donovan McNabb, never won the big one, but had a great, great career and was always very, very solid. You know, but just the year before, 1998, quarterbacks taken 1 and 2 again. Number three on our list in 1998, number one pick in the NFL draft goes to the Indianapolis Colts, Tennessee quarterback Peyton Manning. And we know what Peyton has done, obviously, here in Denver. You know, he's rewritten the record book. And contrary to popular belief, actually has won a Super Bowl. I know we tend to forget that about Peyton Manning, but Manning actually has won. He can never win the big one. Oh, yeah, except for that time he won the big one. He has won the big one. What are you talking about? Peyton Manning, and I know there was a lot of talk when he was coming out. Do we take him or do we take the other guy? I can remember vividly thinking, if you take the other guy, you're an idiot. Because with the number two pick in the 1998 draft, the San Diego Chargers selected Washington State quarterback Ryan Leaf. He had the big arm, had put up some big numbers up at Washington State, big, strong guy, except for the fact he really didn't love the game. And he really wasn't driven to be great. And you saw it right away. He came in, he didn't do his job, wasn't really studying the playbook, didn't really know what he was doing, getting mad at the media. He lasted 4 seasons in the NFL. One of the all-time biggest busts, might be the biggest bust ever drafted. 4 seasons, he was completely out of football, had some legal troubles, did some jail time for drugs. Ryan Leaf, again, one of those situations where it was boom on the one side with Peyton and bust on the other side with Leaf. Number 2 on our list, 1993. Number 1 pick in that draft, the New England Patriots select out of Washington State, Drew Bledsoe. And Drew Bledsoe was a big, strong guy, had a huge arm, all those measurables. He had a good career, but I think we all kind of remember Drew Bledsoe for what he didn't do. You know, he played for 14 seasons in the NFL. He had four. He went to 4 Pro Bowls. He went to the Super Bowl 3 times, and he even won a Super Bowl. Well, sort of, because the part we do remember, he had some bad losses, he had some injuries, threw a lot of interceptions, and he got replaced by Tom Brady. And Brady came in, Bledsoe had the horrific injury mid-season, and Brady came in and somehow took the Patriots all the way to the Super Bowl and won it. That's the one Super Bowl that Bledsoe was a part of. Number 2 in that draft, Notre Dame quarterback Rick Meyer, selected by the Seattle Seahawks. You know, he had never played in a pro-style offense. I mean, Rick Meyer came into the league, he had played in that Lou Holtz offense, they kind of ran some option kind of stuff, it just wasn't the same. He had some measurables, he had a big arm, and he had, you know, some of those things, but he just never quite adjusted. He played 12 seasons in the NFL, but mostly as a backup, never really got on the field that much except for early, and he never really produced. Number 1 on our list of when quarterbacks go 1 and 2 in the NFL draft, and this for me might be the best group of the whole bunch. We've seen a few where it's hit and then miss. These are 2 hits. 1971, with the first pick of the NFL draft, the New England Patriots, again, take Stanford quarterback Jim Plunkett. You know, he was good with the Patriots, but he didn't have a very good offensive around him. He was running a Chuck Fairbanks system, so it wasn't a real conducive offense for him being a good quarterback. Didn't have much help around him either. And he ended up getting, you know, traded to like San Francisco and then being traded to Oakland. And he ended up in Oakland backing up Dan Pastorini. And Pastorini, I want to say he broke his leg or something. And at 33 years of age, they put Jim Plunkett in with the Raiders offense. And he takes the Raiders to the Super Bowl, wins the whole thing. 2 years later, at 35, he does it again. You know, he's the only 2-time Super Bowl winner that is not in the NFL Hall of Fame. Never made it to a Pro Bowl. Maybe that has something to do with it. Second pick in the 1971 NFL draft, out of the Ole Miss University, the New Orleans Saints select quarterback Archie Manning. Archie Manning played 13 seasons, went to 2 Pro Bowls. And the thing about Manning, he played on like dreadful teams. Like, these are not your modern day New Orleans Saints that he went to. These are your dad or your grandfather's New Orleans Saints. They could barely even field a team. They were so horrible. These are the teams that were going seasons with 1 win or no wins or 2 wins. He had no help. And somehow Archie Manning still managed to be great. He was a phenomenal player. Unlike his son with the huge forehead, a scrambler, could move around, could hurt you on the run, could do a lot of different things. He's a very, very athletic player. But he just didn't have any help around him. And you know, it just kind of goes to show you, when these quarterbacks come out, it depends on where you go. You might have a ton of ability. You might have a ton of measurables. If you get in a bad situation, if you get in with a bad team, and you know, when these teams are drafting early, that is a lot of time what we're seeing. You're going to bad teams and sometimes bad system, and maybe not a coach that suits, you know, what you do. You get drafted a little bit later, might be a better situation. We will keep an eye on how the Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota scenario plays out. Hey, just want to say really, really quickly, happy birthday to a listener of the show, to Miss Jamie, listening down in Addison, Texas. Hey, make sure those farmers are listening to the Daily Dose every single week. If you do enjoy the show, please, 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 I would ask you, go to iTunes, you know, go to one to you know, Podcast Republic, subscribe to the show, become one of the subscribers. We have a few companies that are kind of looking at the podcast. They like what they see, but they want to see how many subscribers we can get. If you get a chance, Please go give us a rating. Please go give us a review. We would appreciate that so much. Hey, check out the website. You know, you can go to dailydosesports.wordpress.com, see a lot of the things that we're doing, see a few new articles, and don't be afraid to email me, dailydosesports@gmail.com. I've heard enough from those Lions fans that did not like, some of my grades for their drafts. Hey, it's okay. Remember, it's way, way worse if I'm not talking about your team at all. Next week on the show, we will talk some NBA playoffs. Gonna have to hand out some NBA awards. The regular season is now over. Gonna have to hand out a few regular season awards. NHL playoffs are in full swing. Might have to get to some Major League Baseball and the NFL, which seemingly is just in the headlines year-round. And of course, as usual, we will have our Daily Dose Top 5. Would like to thank all of you for listening. Thank you so much to Frankie Sanchez for appearing. Thank you to JSP. Could not do this show without you. Hey, have a great week, everybody.